Radio Prague News.
A Pentagon official has indicated that the U.S. has additional options regarding potential missile defense installations in the Czech Republic and Poland. An autopsy has confirmed that the death of well-known Czech composer Karel Svoboda was a case of suicide. A former football boss is to remain in custody on kidnapping charges. A Pentagon official from the U.S. Missile Defense Program has indicated that the United States has other options if proposed radar and rocket installations do not find backing in the Czech Republic and Poland. Speaking to journalists on Monday, Brigadier General Patrick O'Reilly expressed optimism over the plan's implementation, saying that within a number of years the system could be fully operational. The U.S. is to begin negotiations with the Czech Republic on a missile defense radar site that would complement a proposed rocket base in Poland. In related news, opponents of the U.S. radar base in the Czech Republic took part in a protest event in Prague on Monday evening. Their march through the city center went ahead despite a ban by Prague City Hall. Some 2,000 people are estimated to have taken part. Civic groups and associations who organized the march say that the presence of a U.S. radar base in the Czech Republic would harm the country's security interests. They have called for a referendum on the issue. Following autopsy results, police have confirmed that the death of composer Karel Svoboda on Sunday was indeed a case of suicide. The body of the 68-year-old Svoboda was found by his wife on Sunday evening at the couple's property in a Prague suburb. He had taken his life using a registered firearm. Karel Svoboda was a household name in the Czech Republic for more than 30 years. He wrote the music for numerous hit songs and also wrote well-known scores for films, musicals, and theater productions. Czech authorities have rejected a request for the release of Jaroslav Starka, the former head of Czech football club Marila Příbram. He's being held in connection with the kidnapping and death of Lambert Krejčíř, the father of a fugitive Czech billionaire. The police allege that Starka and six other men either kidnapped or attempted to kidnap Mr. Krejčíř and then subsequently killed him. He disappeared in the autumn of 2002. His body has never been found. Four professional soldiers have been arrested at an airbase in Čáslav, central Bohemia, as part of a major drugs raid by police, the daily Mladá Fronta Dnes reports. The paper says that the four men are suspected of receiving and distributing heroin. The detained soldiers are aged 20 to 22 and are part of the technical personnel of the airbase. They have been relieved of their duties until the case is fully investigated. A senior police official told Mladá Fronta Dnes that the drugs investigation in Čáslav was still ongoing. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
This is Colin O'Connor, and you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Today, human rights groups call on the Czech Republic to ratify membership of the International Criminal Court. Two more islands are about to resurface on Prague's Vltava River, after an absence of more than 70 years. The unique Bohemian trees used for making Mozart's piano are in danger of dying out. And later in this week's Talking Point, we look at the social impact of the Czech Republic's liberal gambling laws. Stay tuned for this and more. Some of you may know that 104 of the world's countries are now members of the International Criminal Court, or ICC, the tribunal established to try genocide crimes against humanity and war crimes. They include all the members of the European Union, with one notable exception, the Czech Republic. The country signed the treaty in 1999, but Parliament has yet to ratify it. On Monday, four Czech NGOs released a statement criticising this fact, including the League of Human Rights. Rob Cameron spoke earlier to the League's Jan Kratkochvil.
The Czech Republic has always supported international criminal justice, so this thing of non-ratification of the Rome Statutes is in fact a kind of trench to the tradition of the Czech diplomacy. And the second reason, which is very important, is that by one more ratification, the court will be even stronger and it will have better preventive force against violations of those terrible crimes that it has jurisdictions over, and it will be also stronger to try those perpetrators.
Right. The problem is, though, Jan, countries which oppose the International Criminal Court argue that their primary obligation is to protect their citizens. They do have a point, don't they?
Obviously they do. And you can view the International Criminal Court also as an improvement of protection of your citizens, because the International Criminal Court does not have a jurisdiction if your country prosecutes those perpetrators of these crimes. It has got jurisdictions only if the country is unable or unwilling to prosecute the alleged perpetrators of the crimes. And actually, if you are unable to prosecute perpetrators of these crimes, the ICC can be another place where this can happen. And in this way, you can better protect your people.
What do you think explains the Czech Parliament's decision to reject the Treaty on the International Criminal Court in 2001?
I see as the main reason is a simple lack of political will. It is just a simple misunderstanding which arises from many false beliefs about the International Criminal Court, which is the result that it has not been discussed so far in the Czech Republic.
Right. Well, but there is some discussion, isn't there? Because the former foreign minister, Cyril Svoboda, who's now head of the government's legislative council, has said that he will be discussing this matter with the justice minister, who's from the Civic Democrats, which are largely against the ICC.
Well, I hope so. We think that this is the right time to start discussion if it's not already late. But better late than never.
Jan Kratochvíl, I should say, from the League of Human Rights, ending that report by Rob Cameron. Now, in 2002, the Prague district of Karlín was one of the worst affected by flooding on the Vltava River. Restoration of damaged buildings continues to this day, but Prague planners see a bright future for the area, including parks, new office and residential buildings, and two new islands. Ilja Maritz has the details.
The rush of afternoon traffic along the street that's known as Rohanské nábřeží, or Rohanský Island Embankment. Only this isn't really an embankment. There's no water here and no island. The arm of the Vltava River that once separated the land to my left was filled in the 1920s, and since then, Rohanský Island has been a geographic oddity, a name on a map that doesn't match reality. Soon that will change. The city of Prague plans to dig two canals in the district of Prague 8, restoring two former islands, Rohanský Island, right here to my left, and a few kilometers downstream, Maněnský Island.
Je to součást realizace celé infrastruktury.
It's one part of the planned restoration of infrastructure in this part of town. It simply means removing the landfill that was dumped here some decades ago, which shouldn't be complicated to do. Really, it's a matter of channeling water in such a way that this whole area becomes a neighborhood that is both pretty and interesting for people.
Pavel Klega is Prague's deputy mayor responsible for the project. He says that since the 2002 floods, Prague has been looking for a good way to redevelop the most devastated areas adjacent to the Vltava River.
Tak je to myšlenka hlavního města Prahy, konkrétně útvaru rozvoje města.
This was one idea submitted to the city of Prague. We debated it, and in the end we liked it best, in part because it includes literally restoring Rohanský and Maněnský islands as islands. But this will be part of a broader program to bring development to the area, with quite a bit of new housing and other elements that will make this a significant new urban center.
Aby v této lokalitě vzniklo nové městské centrum.
Already, that center is taking shape. Several stylish office buildings have gone up on Rohanský Island's western edge. But behind the glass and granite, there's a tangle of weeds and abandoned buildings. This year, the city of Prague will spend about 280 million crowns, or 140 million US dollars, improving plumbing, gas lines, and other infrastructure on the island. In Mr. Klega's dreams, when this project is finished in 2 to 3 years' time, it will include two waterfalls, a 60-hectare sport and recreational center, and a wharf for private boats. Jiří Friedel is with Povodí Vltavy, the state agency that regulates activities on the Vltava River. He says the two new islands will also reduce the risk of future catastrophic floods.
Actually, the main reason for doing this is to reduce the risk of catastrophic flooding. Combined with improvements to the Líbeňský bridge downstream from here, the channels around these islands should lower the high water mark by several dozen centimetres. Back when the land was filled in the 1920s, they were trying to deepen the Vltava so that freight could pass on boats. But today we're concerned with averting another flood.
While work has already begun, the formal restoration of Rohanský and Maninský Islands as true islands, through the excavation of two new channels in the Vltava River, will probably be completed in 2010.
The subject of global warming seems to be rarely out of the news these days, with even George Bush, known to critics as the toxic Texan, talking of the serious challenge of global climate change in his recent State of the Union address. One of many studies on the issue is currently being prepared by Professor Sid Redner of Boston University, who has been using data on record temperatures from Prague's Clementinum weather station. Ian Willoughby asked him why.
First of all, it's been extremely difficult to find long-term reliable temperature data. And it just so happens that I heard from someone that, oh, I know someone in Prague who has 230 years of data. And so I asked this person for it and he sent it to me. So it's sort of a serendipitous thing.
And what have you used that information for?
I'm looking at the probability of record temperature events occurring. And the point is that if the temperature in the globe was not changing, then the probability of having a temperature record on any given day would gradually go down with time. It's a well-known fact from probability theory. And if there is a systematic change in the temperature, such as global warming, then the frequency of records will not obey this sort of law that would occur if the temperature was not changing. And I was trying to look for a signature of the change of global warming trend by looking at the frequency of record temperature events.
What did you find?
Well, I found that there was a reasonably visible increase in the rate of record high temperature events, which would be consistent with some systematic global warming.
How long a period do you have to survey to be sure it's not just the question of regular temperature fluctuation?
Well, the data I had from Prague was 231 years, and based on my theoretical analysis of the problem, first of all, and given the current rate of global warming, it seemed, again, you can't make a really hard and fast statement about this, but somewhere in the vicinity of 150 years or more of data was sufficient to be able to see a systematic effect on the data. And since Prague had 230 years, it was enough to begin to see a systematic effect.
Excuse my layman's ignorance.
No, it's fine.
But do you think you've proved the existence of global warming then?
No. That's a much too strong statement. All I can say is that at this one location, Prague, there is an increase of temperature records, which would be consistent with global warming. But, you know, if I really wanted to make a smoking gun case, I should really have data from, you know, hundreds of stations around the globe for the same type of period, and then one could see more cleanly. But the thing is that, you know, when climatologists who look at the, you know, weather kind of averaged over the entire globe, I mean, one sees already just from the climatology data that there obviously is global warming. And so, I mean, my initial interest in this problem was a purely intellectual one, which is that we had a heat wave in Boston and there was a record temperature set and the weatherman said, oh, you know, it's record temperature, it must be global warming. And I just got to thinking, can you understand what is the connection between global warming and the frequency of record temperature events?
Professor Sid Redner of Boston University, ending that report by Ian Willoughby. Just a quick reminder that if you just joined us, I'm Colin O'Connor and you're listening to Radio Prague. Now, the deep forests of the Šumava Mountains in South Bohemia used to abound in spruce trees, whose wood was of such high quality that it was used for the production of musical instruments in workshops all over Europe. But these legendary tone spruce trees are becoming increasingly rare, owing to changes in the environment and forest management. Pavla Horáková reports.
Musical instruments cannot be made from any old wood. It's a delicate process which requires the best quality material from hand-picked trees. Jaroslav Norek of the Czech musical instrument maker Strunal explains what distinguishes tone wood from ordinary timber.
Rezonanční dřevo jako takové se vyznačuje tím, že v
The wood has special acoustic features. The trees need to be over 110 to 120 years old and need to grow very slowly and evenly. The grain has to be tight and straight. Such wood usually grows in certain locations, in the middle of forests and on northern slopes. It mustn't have knots, and it has to be straight, not spiraled.
Such locations can be found in the remnants of the virgin forest in the Šumava Mountains, where spruce tone wood for the soundboards of violins, pianos and other instruments has been harvested for centuries to be exported to workshops around Europe. It is said that Mozart himself played on pianos made from Šumava wood.
In the Czech Republic, there is an ideal location, the Šumava Mountains, where at a certain altitude we can find spruce trees which are perfect for musical instruments. They have been logged there since time immemorial. But since Šumava has become a natural reserve and logging has been limited, toned timber has been in short supply.
Tone spruce used to be so plentiful in the Šumava Mountains that it was processed right there at local sawmills. But it is not only increased protection of the environment, but also commercial logging which makes tone wood scarce. Musical instrument making has a long tradition in the Czech lands, but with the declining supply of tone wood, local producers have started turning elsewhere, such as the forests of the Austrian Alps and Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Czech Republic has some of the most liberal gaming laws in the world. With over 130 casinos and 50,000 slot machines, the country is a veritable mecca for gamblers. But for some, the stakes are just too high. Ian Willoughby looks at the social impact of gambling in this week's Talking Point.
There are around 130 casinos in the Czech Republic. Alongside them, there are hundreds more open non-stop, often seedy arcades, known as herne or gaming bars. In fact, there are over 50,000 slot machines in the country. That equals roughly one machine per 200 Czechs, over twice the number per capita as in Germany. Adding lotteries and other forms of gambling, Czechs bet a whopping 90 billion crowns last year. That's over $4 billion. The situation in the Czech Republic is unique in world terms. Not one government since 1989 has approved any kind of plan or position on the gambling industry. On the contrary, privatization of the industry has led to greater competition, which has led in turn to more outlets. The amount of money that Czechs gamble has multiplied several times.
Says Senator Josef Novotny of the European Democrats. He submitted a bill last month aimed at tightening the law on lotteries and gaming and bringing Czech legislation more in line with European Union norms. It failed. Another campaigner against the Czech Republic's gambling habit is psychiatrist Dr. Karel Nešpor. He treats various kinds of addictions at the country's biggest mental hospital, Bohnice, located in a bleak North Prague suburb. Dr. Nešpor has seen a large increase in gambling addiction in recent years.
During 10 years of my practice before 1999, I met just one pathological gambler who combined gambling and alcohol abuse. He was alcohol dependent. But after 1999, the situation changed, and we have many patients now, and the situation gets worse.
And how harmful to Czech society do you think gambling addiction is?
Terribly. Terribly, because you can imagine what happens when manager of a large firm becomes pathological gambler. You may imagine what will happen when a judge or a police officer will become a pathological gambler. You may imagine what happens if a teenager goes into some club to gamble instead of going to school. He will have no qualification and he will become a burden for society, not a contributing member.
One of Dr. Neshpor's patients, a pleasant, quiet-seeming young man named Pavel, was still a teenager, but legal, when he first entered a casino.
Bylo mi 18 let a jedna hodina.
I was 18 years and 1 hour old. As soon as I turned 18, I went to a casino. At the start, I just wanted to see what it was like. That first time, it went well. But after that, things went downhill.
And go downhill it certainly did. Pavel has been at Bohnica for 3 months. He checked himself in after 6 years of crippling addiction.
Způsobilo to ve mně, že mě rodina mi nevěří, kamarádi mě opustili, zbyla mi jenom máma.
It led to my parents not trusting me. My friends all abandoned me. Only my mother has stuck by me. I came here for treatment myself, after again losing my whole pay packet. My girlfriend said she would stand by me, but when I came here, she broke off our relationship completely.
Když se zaklapli dveře, tak skončil veškerý náš vztah.
One reason the Czech authorities tolerate such a high number of gambling establishments is the income they bring. Fees and a percentage of profits go directly to the state in the case of casinos and to local municipalities in the case of hernias. This money then goes towards publicly beneficial purposes and is far from insubstantial. In 2005, over 2 billion crowns was used in this way. That's around 100 million US dollars. In fact, when Josef Novotny's proposed bill was before the Senate, some schools and sports clubs complained they would lose out if it became law. Campaigners against the Czech Republic's liberal gambling regulations would counter that the social cost of gambling should also be taken into account.
These people are not able to pay their debts. Their use the money of their employers for gambling. It is also possible, not quite typical, but we met also violent crimes because of gambling. I must say that one very disturbing phenomenon is homosexual prostitution because of gambling in teenage boys.
Dr. Neshpor's patient, Pavel, told me the average Czech salary can be gambled away in mere minutes in a casino. It's not surprising, perhaps, that he too, like many addicts, became involved in crime.
Viděl jsem kolem sebe hodně mladých lidí, kteří byli na tom tak, že neměli peníze, scháněli, kde mohli.
I've seen a lot of young people around me who would do anything to find the money. They committed crimes. Some of them even sold their bodies. I myself lied, and I didn't steal, but I did commit crimes. I took loans from banks illegally. It was fraud, or what's called tunneling.
Z té banky dostával nelegálním způsobem, v Čechách se tomu říká podvod nebo tunelování.
Despite the crime, including suspected money laundering associated with gambling, the few moves there have been to limit and more closely regulate hernia bars and casinos have come to little. Senator Josef Novotny blames this on alleged ties between some politicians and big players in the gambling business. But he believes the problem is so serious, change will simply have to come.
Já předpokládám, protože poté, když jsme 20. prosince byli odmítnuti s tou mírnou verzí novely, tak připravujeme.
Since our mild amendment to the lotteries and gaming laws was rejected in December, we've been preparing a far stricter bill. Civic Democrat senators have indicated to me that they won't be able to reject it next time around. Because the public are starting to realize it's a serious problem. It affects 100,000 pathological gamblers and their families. It's alarming, and we simply have to do something about it.
Psychiatrist
Dr. Karel Neshpor is also positive about the future.
If you believe in evolution, that things developed from worse to better, so there must be some evolution in this field, and I hope that this gambling industry will die like dinosaurs.
And that edition of Talking Point by Ian Willoughby brings us to the end of today's programme. Remember, if you feel like commenting on anything you've heard today, or if you've any queries for us, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write us a letter to Vinohradska 12, 120, 99, Prague 2, or simply send an email to english@radio.cz. That's english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Colleen O'Connor, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and take care.